You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon from Los Angeles. It's 12 noon here, and I'm excited to be here, excited to have you here with me on my show, Show Me the Numbers, on LA Talk Radio. I'm Yael Kagan. I'm a hypnotherapist. I master in neurolinguistic programming and master in numerology. I am also the author of the book, Unlock Your Child's Potential, which is a guide to parenting through numerology. And I meet you here every Wednesday bringing different guests. And I have a I'm honored to have a guest like that. And I'm going to bring her in a few seconds. And here she is. Hi, Aliza.
Hi, Al. How are you?
Very good. So honored to have you here with me. And Aliza Ben-Shalom, she's a matchmaker and a dating coach. And you became very, you know, familiar everywhere, especially in my area, because of she was a star, I would say, of the show, of a Netflix show, Jewish Matchmaking. And I'm going to hand it over to you now so you can introduce yourself.
Okay, thank you so much. So happy to be here with you. And I work professionally as a dating and relationship coach and a matchmaker for marriage-minded singles. And I lived in Philadelphia for most of my life. We moved. We live in Israel now. And this is what I do full time. It's not just a Netflix show called Jewish Matchmaking. It's not just a celebrity thing. It's a real thing that I do in my real life. I absolutely adore it. And one of my favorite things is really getting inside, kind of like you do NLP and other things where you kind of get inside people's heads and hearts and you're able to open them up. That's my favorite thing. Although that's not my background, but that's definitely a part of the work that I do.
That's wonderful, and I'm very jealous that you actually moved back to Israel, or did Aliyah probably, and I'm yes. still here, but so I'm very jealous, and really, I admire you for doing that. And we're going to dive a little bit into the subject, because it's very interesting how matchmaking is like an old days, you know, tradition, which is actually coming back into even reality show. And I found it fascinating. I'm also fascinated with another Jewish matchmaking show going on now, and I'm waiting for your next. And I wanted you to tell the audience, basically, what is matchmaking today compared to traditional methods, and who uses it, specifically religious versus secular Jews?
So matchmaking today has both modern matchmaking and traditional matchmaking. If you go into the religious communities, you're going to see the traditional matchmaking. And if you go into the modern Jewish communities, you're going to find modern matchmakers who are there to help people. Traditionally, matchmaking has been where a family would bring their son or their daughter. They would come, they would talk about the kind of person they wanted, the kind of family they came from, the values, and the matchmaker would set them up. But it was a whole family affair. And if we look at what's happening in modern matchmaking, often younger singles, first of all, they're not dating in their early 20s. A lot of them are waiting to date until their 30s or 40s. And when they're coming, they're not coming with their whole mishpacha, their whole family. They're just coming themselves to try to find somebody. So it is more of a process that they are doing on their own. And they come to a matchmaker, and we have lots of different methods of working with them, working with their dating profile, and trying to help them to meet the right person, make the introductions, make sure that their head and their heart are aligned, that who they're really looking for is also looking for them, right? We want to make sure that those things are aligned, and guiding them through the process and then making those introductions step by step.
Now, I know that it's something I've been seeing lately, or in the past, whatever, 20, 25 years, that especially in the secular world, you can see that people, like you said, instead of getting married or looking for relationships so that they can get married in their 20s, it's now pushed back to like 30s and even older than that. Do you see the same thing in the religious Jews as well?
No, I would say that the religious community starts somewhere around 18, sometimes even earlier, but let's say right around 18 they're starting, and somewhere around 22, 23 people are starting to feel like an older single, which is almost a joke in the secular community that, you know, that you're older at 23. They're like, what? We're not even thinking about marriage. That doesn't come until much later. So we are not seeing the same trends. I think that it's, for anybody, it's difficult to find their person and it's taking time. And we do have older singles in the religious community as well. But by older, I'm talking, you know, 30s and 40s. But it is, it's not a trend in the younger community. Although, let's say in their community, instead of starting at 18, maybe they're going to wait and start at 22. It could be because they're still learning or combining, you know, Jewish Torah learning with a university profession.
Do you think, I mean, that's, you know, your personal thoughts about it, but do you think it's part of the problem why more secular are having issues with finding their soulmate and getting into serious relationships?
I think in general, it's always been very hard to find your soulmate. There's never a life age or life stage when it's, quote, easy to find your person. But I do think that it's a little bit easier when you're not fully developed. So when I'm in my early 20s, right, and I'm just figuring out who I am and I have values, I know what I want in my life, but I'm not fully formed. When I meet and marry somebody, we can grow together. But if I'm in my 30s, in my 40s, I'm developed. I have my ideas. I know what I want. I'm much more rigid, strict. I'm much more comfortable in my own little box. Then I have less room to match when I'm with somebody because it's less comfortable for me because I've already developed in a way without that partner side by side. And therefore, it does make it a little bit more challenging to find that person and build that relationship.
And what I was looking at your title, and I saw the dating coach, which I loved. And I'm a therapist myself, and I've been working with, I've been coaching couples for a few years now. And I wanted you to get more into it because the more I watched those shows, I learned more what exactly is a dating coach. But can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So I often tell people because they're like, oh, wait, you're a therapist? I was like, no, not a therapist. You know what they do, right? I'm not that. That's not my degree, not my background. As a coach, we work with people in the present and the future. So the past, it's something that we maybe have to know about. There's a little bit of information, but it's not like a therapist that might help you to work on those things. That's not where we have a specialty. Our specialty lies in who you are and who you want to become, right? As you build yourself to find that person. So my hyper focus is to help somebody be very clear about their values, be very understanding about their personality and what personality types they match with, have an understanding of those relationship fears or triggers or things that come up from them, whether it's something from childhood or from a relationship that they had. Not that we do therapy on it. We just have an understanding that here's the challenge that we might come across. And then we try to make those introductions and see where we can have a majority of things in alignment with the least amount of friction in the relationship.
And it's almost connecting me to my next question, which is how does matchmaking differ from using dating apps? It kind of like goes with that questions, but if you can explain that a little bit, you know, dive into it a little bit more.
Yeah, so dating apps are actually a matchmaking tool so that you can be your own matchmaker. A lot of people are anti-dating apps or they're tired of the dating apps, and I'm not anti-dating apps, but I understand why you're tired. You're tired because you're your own matchmaker, because you're doing all the work that we do daily, but without all of the skills. So if you're not somebody who's very good at processing data and analyzing it and refining searches and, you know, going through the hunting phase, then this is going to be a very frustrating process for you. For me, it's almost like a puzzle that I'm putting together. Like, oh, I don't like what that search result yielded. Okay, let me change my parameters. Okay, let me change a few other details. Oh, let's see what we get. Oh, now we got something else. Okay, that's interesting. And for me, I'm constantly analyzing the data. But the dating apps turn you into your own matchmaker. So if I empower encourage you to become your own matchmaker, to have the skill set that you needed to be your own matchmaker. First of all, it might be a little bit easier. But second of all, you still might not like it because you have to do all the work of it. And the work that we do, on one hand, is similar because we do use databases. We have our own databases that we use. But we also do a lot of networking, a lot of collaboration with other matchmakers, thousands of matchmakers in the industry all over the world. We also do a lot of personal connections. So we are constantly talking to people and meeting them. And hi, and who do you know? And where are you from? Oh, wait, that's so interesting. You're from Canada? Hold on. I have a client from there. Toronto? Okay, wait. You know, and we're trying to constantly see, you know, we're playing the 6 degrees of separation to try to figure out who people know and where our next match can come from.
That's quite amazing. And obviously, I must ask you about the Netflix show because I have to. It's a Jewish making. I believe it was the first reality show on Netflix about Jewish matchmaking, because I know they have the Indian matchmaking and obviously there's a lot of other Americans one, but the Jewish matchmaking, this was the first. Can you share some insights from your experience on the show?
Yeah. First of all, I loved making this show. This was absolutely phenomenal. It's a reality show. So people are like, oh, but even reality isn't really reality. I'm like, no, this was pretty accurate. They really did a phenomenal job. The production company is called IPC, and they worked with Netflix to produce the show. And it's the sister show to Indian Matchmaking. And when I watched Indian Matchmaking, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. Oh, Seema, she's like, it's like the same thing with Jewish matchmaking, but it's just with Indians. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is so similar. The show itself takes place all over the United States and in Israel as well. And there are main clients and people who are my main daters. I call them clients, but they're the main daters that I'm trying to set up, and I'm trying to go on the hunt to find their person. And I set them up on a, you know, variety of different dates and see if we can find a match. And some of them, you know, some of them go out, you see some things that are brewing, and I don't want to, you know, no spoiler alerts if you didn't watch it, but it's really fascinating. And it gives you an insight into how matchmaking works, how Jewish matchmaking works, and some of the values that we have. I'll give you an example.
Please.
So we have something that's called the 5-date challenge, and there's multiple parts of the 5-date challenge. One is that you should mentally be prepared to go on 5 dates. And the second thing is that you should try no touching, hands off, for 5 dates. And secular people look at me and they're like, Aliza, I don't know if you're up to date with the modern world. I said, no, I grew up secular. I didn't grow up religious. I know the modern world. They're like, oh,
you didn't tell that. You didn't tell us about that.
Yeah. They said, okay, so I'll tell you. But they said, you know, you know what we're doing on a second date or even a first date. I said, I know. And it's a problem. It's not working. So let me teach you how to make it work. And basically what I talk about is, if you like the person in front of you and you go out on date one and it's good, and you go out on date two and you still want to go out on a date three, and oh my gosh, you get to 5 dates. And if you didn't touch them, just imagine, how much do you like them? You must really like them, because who's going to hang out with you 5 times without touching you? Nobody. Nobody's going to do it. So at the end of 5 dates, what do I know? I know you like them. And I know for sure that they also like you back. It's like a win-win. And I know that there's real potential in the match here. After date 5, I kind of look away, you know, whatever happens, happens, take it slow. But I know that there's actually real potential, because there's nobody, no man and no woman, that's sticking around to actually stick with somebody for 5 dates without touching. Like, you have to have touched hearts if you didn't touch hands or anything else.
That's actually amazing, because you are bringing the traditional matchmaking into the modern world, something which is not familiar for a lot of the younger generation. And I have to say that one of the reasons why I started watching the show, not only that I knew some people on the show, but my kids were telling me, they were in their twins, saying, what, Ima, you haven't watched the show yet? And once I started, I dived right into it, and it's like addicting. It's like you have to immediately wait for the next episode, and it was quite amazing. And it was in Israel, and it was here, it was in different places. Another thing that is very interesting to learn from you is those challenges, because this generation is the instant generation. Everything has to be 1, 2, 3. Everything happens so fast. And therefore, also, you cut relationships so quickly. You are not trying. Also, there's why there are so many divorces in the world, because people are not putting enough effort, and which is basically what you are doing, which I love. I mean, it's, I think it's a startup, what you are doing, and you, and how you are taking the old world and taking what was working very well back then and putting it into this world, saying, if it haven't worked for you until now, come try something new. And I think people are looking for that. And question, how accurate is a show like that? Because, you know, you many times when you watch a reality show, you hear, no, that's all rating. They cut this and they cut that. I felt that even if they did cut some, I felt like I got the real picture. How accurate are those?
So I would agree with you that you got the real picture. And what you do miss is the other side, right? So if you see each character had a different persona and personality type, and they leaned into that. So the scenes that they cut in and left in all followed that archetype, that personality type. But those are real personality types. What you're missing is they have more parts to them, of course. But the parts that they did show you really are true. It's really a part of who the people were. I met them. And the thing that you also might miss is that sometimes some of the comments that come off a little bit snarky or with a little bit of attitude, they were actually very playful moments. Like even a second after that, they were laughing and we were laughing together. Like it was a little bit of banter and play, but you just see like a, like a little, ooh, like a moment that you're like, ooh, you know, and it doesn't always feel the best, but it came from a very playful moment. People were very open. They were raw. They were honest. There aren't any lines in terms of it being a reality show. You get on. The first time I met the first person on camera, I said to the production crew, I said, you know, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? And they're like, what do you normally do during your interview? And I was like, oh, like, that's it. Like, I get to just be me and do my thing. They're like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I need a notebook. Like, if I'm not here with my computer, I got to take notes. And I actually met with Harmony first, and she was like, I have books. Hold on. I have a notebook for you. And she gave me a notebook. And that's how I got started with my notebook, because I normally sit there. I take notes. I pay attention. I'm with them in the moment. We're talking. I'm jotting things down. And so to me, it's real, but you are missing the other side. So like what you saw was real, but you didn't see the other pieces of it that make up a full picture.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, you're still limited to time. Another thing that shocked me, and I was interested to hear from you, is it something that happens even before or outside of the show? Like, Israel is small. So if someone from Tel Aviv, you will match them with someone in Haifa or Be'er Sheva, it's not a big deal. It's a quick move. It's not a big transport, you know, to get from one place to another. But in America, I saw some of the matches were like Miami or New York or whatever. Does it actually work?
So we do a lot of long distance dating because we're looking for the best match. I would much prefer, if you gave me a choice, close or far, I'd prefer close. But if I have a choice of close but not a good match, but far but a much better match, then I would choose far. So for me, I'm always looking for the best match. The location is like, oh, okay, I'm so sorry. It's not close. I'll help you get through a long distance relationship. I'll teach you all about, you know, long distance and virtual dating. And that's a part of the process. It's not my favorite, but it's definitely done in modern day. And also so many people travel so much. And even more so since COVID, many, many people work from home and they're often on the go. Like clients that I have, they're like, oh, not available. I'm like, what do you mean you're not available? I got to, you know, they're like, no, I'm traveling. I'm like, well, where are you? Maybe I'll set you up where you are. Yeah, I'm working from here this week or this month. You know, like I live in Chicago, but I'm in LA for the month because I work virtually. So it doesn't matter. And I was like, okay, but you have to give me a heads up. I need to know these things so I could match you with somebody potentially in your city. So okay, it does work. It's not my preference, but
it's another challenge.
It's a challenge. Everything's a challenge in a relationship.
That's for sure. You're just adding another one. But yeah, I mean, in America, probably it has to work this way. So people are kind of used to it. And going back to the show, what were your expectations from the show? And the biggest questions that I just have to put out here is, can we expect a season 2?
We're still no news, so we're hoping and praying that there will be a season two, because season one was so phenomenal and we got such wonderful reviews from people. And the other part of the question is, what was the other half of that? You asked,
what were your expectations from that show?
So I have to tell you, I was a little nervous because the Jewish people have not always been represented so beautifully in the media and with shows, whether it's reality or non-reality shows. It's still been something that is like a little bit of a fight for us to kind of like get it right for the Jewish people. And I expected for them not to get it so right, but, you know, kind of good enough maybe. But the truth is, I think they did a phenomenal job. We had religious Orthodox people on the show. I'm observant. We had other people that were observant on the show. We had traditional people. We had conservative Jewish people. We had Reform Jewish people. We had non-affiliated, never even dated a Jewish person, but I'm Jewish people on the show. We had so many different walks of life of Judaism represented that I felt like they represented us so beautifully and very, I'll call it fairly, like where you're like, yeah, oh, a Jewish person's like that. Oh, they're also like this. Oh, they're also like that. And it's not a contradiction. Each one of us are different. Each one of us are unique. And we still are the Jewish people, which I think is pretty incredible. So I have to say, I did have some reservations. I didn't know what was going to happen to me or the Jewish people. But I knew that if I put my best foot forward and represented myself in the best way possible, that I had the best shot for it to turn out good, but it turned out even better than I had hoped for.
It was, I have to tell you, it was super successful. Again, if my teens were watching it, then trust me, it was very, they got into the characters and they were calling and saying, you can't believe what this one said today and what this was happening. Do you know if they are still dating? And so everybody was like living it. And I know they're all waiting for season two. So we will cross fingers that will happen. And I think you touched it a little bit, but you do both Jewish and non-Jewish matchmaking?
Primarily, our audience is Jewish singles, because that's where our greatest and strongest network are located. We're able to do coaching and support anybody from any background. But in terms of matchmaking, we have taken on non-Jewish singles and networked with our non-Jewish matchmakers, I would say. But it's not our primary audience. Our primary audience is Jewish singles of all backgrounds. I would say before the show, I mostly worked with observant singles, let's say 75% observant singles and 25% secular singles. And now it's kind of flipped because of the show. And I would say that we have 75% non-observant people or somewhere in the not Orthodox or not observant realm, and about 25% in the observant realm.
Wow, that's quite amazing.
Yeah, I guess the truth is that we probably have the same amount of not, you know, observant singles as we always had. We just have more non-observant singles now because our numbers went up after the show, obviously.
Interesting. I have to get into that. Again, I'm a therapist, so I have to ask more like deeper questions. Yeah. And I do want to ask what specific methods or what kind of tools contributes to successful matchmaking.
I think when people are very clear about who they are and their values, it's very important to me. Not that they should be rigid in who they're looking for, but when I'm clear about who I am, then I can assess how well you do or don't match with me. What I do ask people to do is to be open to the possibility of something being maybe different than they imagined. For some people, and you'll hear this many times, like, oh, you know, I met somebody and I never expected them to be this way, right? They're like, okay, right? So we have to be open. But on the other hand, I've heard a lot of people go, I knew they were my person. It was exactly what I was looking for. I got exactly what I wanted. That was the only thing I wanted. Well, that's another type of person that's going to get that type of an experience. My main goal is to make sure that people have alignment today and that in the future, again, they'll have alignment so that 2, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, it's not like, oh, I don't know why I married you. I don't think this is going to work out, right? I want it to be that people get married and that they stay married. It's not my job to get you married. It's my job to help you stay married. And if I can teach you all of the tools that you need now during the dating period, then I can help you long term to keep that partner that we help you find.
100%. And I think that one of the main, most of the work that I see, at least, is for people to connect to themselves. And when you interview someone about who he is, what is he bringing to the table, I think a lot of people, just by doing that, has to go through a process, has to kind of like go through a journey. And I'm curious to ask you if you see the same thing, because what happens today, especially because people are using different apps, not to talk about, obviously websites as well, but people will only see what ones describe themselves as 1, 2, 3. There's no way of checking whether it's correct or not. You fall in love with the person that is out there on the application or on the website, but you don't have the actual tools to find out if that's who that person is. In your case, you interview them before, which I believe that's probably one of the biggest assets here, because you know that someone else interviewed the person, checked everything. But do you find it like me that a lot of the issues for people is to connect to themselves, know exactly who they are, and more than that, what are they looking for? That's the biggest challenge that I see in my practice.
Yes, absolutely. Knowing who I am and knowing what I'm looking for and is going to match me. And then, like you also said, making sure that when I find somebody, I know how to build that relationship. And I think that one of the key things is to be curious, to not assume that you know everything about them, even if you have their vibe or you get them, still to be curious, to ask questions. Who are they? And what do they want out of life? And what kind of a life are they looking to build? And then to think about and compare, what kind of a life do you want to build? And how much do you have in common? And where are the differences? Because wherever we see differences, we're going to see a little bit of friction in a relationship. So if one person wants to build a family right away and somebody else wants to travel and see the world for the first couple of years, there's going to be friction in the beginning of that relationship, unless they come to an understanding, okay, we're going to go see the world for a year, 2 years, and then we're going to get to the business of building a family. And if we don't have that understanding of who we are and what we want, and we don't have an understanding of where somebody else is holding and what's good for them also, then we would have a very hard time building that long-term relationship and having that follow-up conversation.
Right. And what I always tell people, first of all, if somebody is coming to you, it means that something didn't work until now and they're seeking for help. So I always tell people to try to be less judgmental and try to be more open up. And one of the biggest thing to success in life is just go with the flow. Just try, don't be that rigid. Try to open your eyes, try to be more open-minded. Maybe you are wrong. Maybe you think that that's what you're looking for, but actually that is not the most important thing for you. And I assume that's part of the coaching that you will do with people like that, because again, if it didn't work for them until now, it may not work going forward. So how open are they to changes? Because obviously changes are needed here. And as a numerologist, and you know I'm a numerologist, I'm curious to know how much do you know about numerology, especially relationships numerology map, which we do, and was wondering if you ever thought of incorporating it into the matchmaking process.
Actually, I don't know a lot about numerology. I know in general about it. She's like, yay!
I can teach Alisa something.
Yes, better, always. I know in general about it. I know about a lot of things, but a little bit about a lot, because a lot of people come and this one likes numerology and that one likes the Enneagram and this one likes Myers-Briggs and this, everybody has like something that they're into. So I'm constantly learning about new things, but it's definitely not an area of expertise for me. But I do find that there's a lot of wisdom in many different things. So I think that there is an amount of wisdom that is within numerology that somebody can learn about themselves, learn about their partner. And I don't think that there's any one thing that is like, oh my gosh, it's the only thing in the world that works. I think it's one of many tools. And if you haven't found out about it, great, learn about this, see if it's good for you. And if it is, I think people should use it.
100%. And I'm obviously not going to teach numerology here. I just wanted to throw it out here because we were talking about the initial interview and how a person that's being interviewed will tell you that he's this and this and that. Those are his strengths. Those are maybe his weaknesses. This is what he's looking in a relationship. And by opening a numerology map without even knowing my client, I know so much information. But what is more interesting in here is that when you do a relationship numerology map, I can put the just three figures. That's all I need, which is the life path number, which I calculate, the day of birth and the name of the person. I can tell where there may be challenges. And some of the challenges are crucial because if I know to work with that person on that specific challenge, then maybe those were his issues, whether it's something to do with communication. Some people are very good about communication, and some people, you will sometimes push them into a corner, and that's when their defense mechanism will come up, and that's when, you know, they are not able to maintain the relationship because communication is everything. Or one person, his priority is family and the children and the harmony in the family, while the second person is very materialistic. It's not a bad word, materialism, so I'm not going there. But they are more about the career and about work. So if that person comes and the wife will tell me he doesn't care about the kid had a Tu Bishvat party in the kindergarten and he didn't show up, I can explain it's not that he doesn't want the kid. It's not that he doesn't love you or care about you. It's because for him, work, career, it's something that comes before everything. And if it, you know, if it doesn't go together, his choices may be different. So it's not a bad thing. You just explain to them where they are different. And that's how they learn to accept each other. And that's just a tool that I love within the numerology. And that's why I wanted to ask you, because I watch a lot of shows and sometimes I go to Wikipedia and I will look for the date of birth of that person. And I can already see where the problem. Some people, there is a number 9 in numerology, that those are, they express themselves, they're supposed to express themselves very well. But if they are not, because of whatever issues from the past, the house they were raised in, doesn't matter, when they are not, when they get into an argument, they close, they finish, they cut the relationship and they go. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, intimacy, if it's work relationship, if it's friendship, that's the way they do. So that's why I was asking you, because I think it's an amazing tool. And it's I think many people are open to that lately, astrology and numerology. I'm not that familiar with astrology, but I just think that it's a great tool, first of all, to learn things about the person without judging them, obviously, because they may have done work.
You convinced me. I'll do it. I need it.
You're booked. We got it. That's something that we had some conversations.
I know you're passionate. And again, I think that everybody has a tool that they connect to that speaks to them, that opens their eyes so that when you look at different people, you go, oh, I know that kind of a person. I understand who they are. I understand what that means. And that is the greatest thing. For me, if I feel understood, you could be my new best friend, right? You understand me. You get me. There's no greater pleasure. That's how I feel. I personally feel that there's no greater pleasure than being completely understood who I am, what I mean, what I believe, what, even if I said this, but I meant that, you know what I mean, of course, because you know who I am. It just feels so good when you know who I am. And if you can get that without even talking to me, just by, you know, looking at the numbers and just by kind of having all the wisdom and the information that you have, I think that's an incredible tool.
100%. And I use it in with my own relationship, I have to say, and with me, my relationship with my kids at work, with everybody. So I definitely find it fascinating. So here I gave you an idea of something else that you can incorporate into matchmaking. How do you see the future of matchmaking? Do you see it something that's like controlling lately in the world? Like you see more people switching from the modern, traditional, you know, way of doing it until now. Definitely apps, many people want to leave them. They don't believe in it, but still there are dating apps. Even the younger, like in the, you know, 20s, 22, 23, I already starting seeing them doing that. Where do you see? Do you see more people wanting the whole package, like you said, walking hand by hand with a matchmaker? Or do you see still people, you know, staying stuck on their old traditions or whatever they know, that's what they do?
I think that a lot of people modern day are turning to matchmaking because they value getting support and not having to have the hassle. So you go to the gym, right? You could work out, or you could get a personal trainer who's going to help you through this process and hold you accountable to accomplishing your goal. I think matchmaking is the same thing. If you want to be held accountable to accomplish your goal, which is to meet your life partner, then you want to make sure you have somebody by your side who's going, okay, come on, we got this. And this week, here's what we're going to do. Okay. And next week, here's how we're going to approach this. But I don't think that apps are ever going to disappear. I think that apps are relevant because there's a lot of people that like the DIY do-it-yourself model where I could just take care of it faster, better, easier on my own. I can have my own picks and I don't need any, my own choices, so to speak. And I don't need anybody else to make that choice for me. But I do see matchmaking being something that's very much a part of the modern world, more so than it ever was. And people are liking it. Like, they're enjoying the experience of having somebody support them and sharing the wisdom and helping to make the whole process a little bit easier. And we've seen it across the board in the Jewish world, in the non-Jewish world, all over. People are excited, like, oh, maybe I can play matchmaker. And I'm like, yes, everybody needs to be a matchmaker. This is, if you have a real job, right? I joke that matchmaking is not a real job, but it is. But if you have a day job, right? And everybody needs a hobby, right? So besides whatever your hobby is, whether you like to fish or dance or I don't care what, you should also play matchmaker at least once a month. Make a match suggestion. It doesn't have to even lead to a date, but just think about somebody and try to make a smart match with somebody else that you know and start talking to people and try to connect people, because there's a lot of single people all ages. People are not just single for the first time, but some people are divorced or widowed and they've lost somebody. Some people with children, without children, grandparents. The oldest person I worked with, she was 88, turning 89. Wow. And she was looking for love. And her son came to me in synagogue and said, Elisa, can you help my mother? And I said, what? I said, how old is she? He said, you know, 88. I said, I don't know that I'll have a match for her, but I could coach her and I could help her find her own match. And he said, okay. And she found what I call mystery in your history. She found somebody that she knew from her past and she started dating. And the last I heard that it was going well. I haven't checked in a little bit.
You just gave me an idea for my mom's 90th birthday. She's in Jerusalem. We're going to get her a gift for her 90th birthday. We'll do a matchmaking session with Elisa. That's wonderful. Pleasure. That's wonderful. I love hearing that. That's absolutely great. I'm moving into another subject, which is a little bird that whispered in my ear about an upcoming book. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Okay, so it's officially going to be announced really soon. I think this is being live streamed, so you're getting a sneak peek. Shh. But there's a book
only me
out.
And you here.
Only you and me. It's coming out in December and it is called Matchmaker, Matchmaker, Find Me a Love That Lasts. And it is so wonderful. I'm going to tell you what's unique about this book that I'm obsessed with it is that it reads like a fiction book, but it's nonfiction. So it reads like a story like that you're experiencing and going through this. But it's about my clients. We change names and all those things. And you get to see how I work with people. You see the real advice that I give. You see what really happens and how they went through the process. And then I have homework at the end. And I always give people a little bit of an action plan. And like, maybe you should try this. And what do you think about that? So that it's not just like, oh, that was a nice read and go about your business. You can actually take it and read it like a book that's going to help you to find your person, or for you, right? You want to help your children find somebody. You can read it and you can learn all my tips and tricks and you can be like, hey, you know, maybe you want to try this. Elisa says, if you try this, it might work. and it's really exciting. I'm really, really excited.
So it's almost like a guide to dating or something like that.
It's a guide to dating and finding the love of your life.
Wow, that's amazing. Is it coming in English or Hebrew?
It's coming out in English. If it's so successful, I'm sure they'll translate it and do things elsewhere. And it's going to be available all over. Wherever you buy books, you're going to be able to find it.
Okay, so people from the U.S. obviously can, I'm assuming...
Amazon, I mean, everybody from all over the world, you can ship from Amazon and get it to your door in a couple days or a couple weeks, depending on where you live.
True, true. Is there like an example that you can share from the book that we, you know, audience can understand how exactly, like, get them fascinated and like waiting for it when it comes out?
So one of the things that I talk about on the show that I go into more depth in the book is this concept that I call date 'em till you hate 'em. And date 'em till you hate 'em, people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. But it has actually helped multi-generational singles, because I recently got a comment from somebody who was in her 70s. And this was through a friend, you know, a friend of a friend that said to me, you won't believe what happened. She was going out with this guy and she thought, well, he's okay, but he's not exactly what I'm looking for. And she said, you know, I watched Aliza's show and she said, date him till you hate him. Let me just, he's not, there's nothing that's like wrong. It just, I didn't think it was exactly for me. So she said, but I got to date him a little longer because I don't hate him and it's kind of, it's okay. So she goes out on a second date. She goes out on a third date. She writes back and she goes, well, after five dates, I actually really like him. I don't hate him at all. I think I'm stuck. It's working out. So we dig more into this wisdom about how to go about the process to get the results that you want. You want your person. And a lot of people think, well, you need to go through the quantity and the numbers. And it's a numbers game. I'm talking about numbers, but it's a numbers game, right? Just keep dating until you figure it out and just keep going, you know, next. Okay, no, it's not always about next. If you just go out on one date and one date and one date and one date, I don't know, but you probably missed something, because there's nothing that usually is so horrible that maybe, all right, take that back. 25% of the cases, you don't want a second date. But really, 75% of the cases, you really could go out again. There's really more to see and more to learn. And maybe you weren't yourself and maybe they weren't themselves and maybe somebody had a bad day. And we need to go through this process a little bit more gracefully and I would say a little bit more intentionally. I consider date them till you hate them a part of intentional dating. We are intentionally dating in a way that is going to result in me finding my person and not making a mistake, not saying no too fast or too slow, and saying yes to the right person.
Where do you think, from your own, you know, your own thoughts, what do you think the issue is, and why do some people after a first date are like, not sure, whatever, and after the fourth or fifth date, suddenly they are more, you know, interested, they found things maybe they didn't see in the first date. Where do you think the problem is?
So if we do the math, I'm all about the math here. If we do the math of I met you once, right? So my entire knowledge base of you is based on one interaction. Let's call it 2 hours. Okay, so I have 2 hours of information. And some people make an instant decision. They make it on 3 seconds worth of information. But I have 2 hours worth of information. Let's say I go out on a second date, a third date. Now maybe I have, I don't know, 7-8 hours worth of information. So the 2 hours compared to 8 hours, that's only a quarter of what I know. Now maybe 75% I'm really into, and the first 25%, oh, it wasn't so great. I just think most people don't have enough data to make the decision at the time that they're making it. Sometimes you do, but if there's, and again, if there's any doubt, I say when in doubt, go out. When you have doubt, when you feel doubt, when you're not sure if you should go out or you shouldn't go out because you don't know if you like them enough, go out. Another date will give you the data. It will give you the information. Then you can say no and walk away, or you could say yes and say, I still need more information. I'm still in doubt. We should really only walk away when it's a hard no. If it's not a no, it's a go. I've got all these rhymes. This is my thing.
I see that.
I like rhymes.
And you know,
like poetry.
I agree with you so much, because many people do not process things too quickly. So we are very judgmental. Like you said, within the first 30 seconds, we already think something. We already judge the person. But what happened, people are not processing it right. And by going home and talking to your friend, and now your mom called you, maybe the matchmaker called you and asked, how was it? What did you like? You start processing things. And then you see that it wasn't really that bad. There are other things that you're still very curious about and you do want to give it another chance. And that's the way I see it. But I do want to say that I learned from our last conversation and this conversation two very, very important things. One that you told me was I'm not a doer, I'm a donner. And because I'm so much like you, I keep using it because we are donners. We are like, okay, next, done. It's done. And the second one that I learned today that I loved is that to date them until you hate them. When other people will tell you date them until you fall in love with them, it's like only if you hate them, then stop dating, which I absolutely like. So I'm learning from you. You see, I'm writing down and I'm definitely going to use it. And really, it was a pleasure. We have very, very few minutes and I want to ask you if there is any message you can bring those who knows enough about the matchmaking world. Yes, they will still, you know, get something out of it. But those who are right now listening to us on the live stream, but others will listen to the recording, which will be on my page, and you can put it obviously on your page as well, on the radio page. What kind of message do you want to send them? Because after all, we are here to help people. We want people to fall in love. We want people not just to fall in love and get married. We want them to maintain a good marriage and build a family, obviously. Try to find like few, you know, very strong sentences so that those people can get out of the show and say, wow, she's changed my mind completely.
I often tell people that if you want to find your person, never stop looking, right? Some people are like, oh, you know, maybe it'll just happen whenever. I'll just keep going about my life. No, it's not going to happen whenever. Maybe for some people in the world it does, but that's not how it normally works. If you want something and you make an effort towards it and it doesn't happen at first and it's a fail and a fail and a fail and a fail, but if you keep trying, eventually it's going to work. In general, with life, we always fail until we don't, right? So if you are failing at dating, you're doing it right because you're only supposed to find that one person and then you don't keep going, right? So if you haven't found them, you're doing dating right, but then just don't stop looking. Keep looking. If you need a break, take a vacation. If you need downtime, okay, but don't give up. This is our life's work. I think it's one of the hardest things that we have to do in the world is to find this person. And it takes a lot of effort. If you need support, get support, but the person who finds their person is the person that never stops looking. So keep looking and don't give up. And know that I think this is one of the hardest things to do in the world. I think it's the hardest thing to find your person. I think it's the hardest thing to be in a relationship. I think it's the hardest thing to maintain a relationship. And it's also the greatest joy and it's also the greatest pleasure. And with all of the effort comes the reward. And it doesn't come without the effort. And that is, it is supposed to be challenging. It's not like, oh, well, it should just be easy. It should just be what it is, which is a challenge, dating. That's what it is. And that's okay. But don't give up. If you want to find your person, never, ever, ever stop looking. Keep looking and you will find them.
Right. I love it. And I do want to say it again, like get the support that's needed. That's why the dating coaching is there. That's why other type of therapy are there. Maybe there's something you can change. Maybe there's something you are not seeing about yourself or about the person you're looking. But don't stop. Definitely don't stop. And don't feel that you are failing. There is a reason. You are not a failure. There are other people that can help you here. Just keep going. And probably the kind of like last thing I want to ask you is when people wants to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, with pleasure. Go to my name, alizabenshalom.com, and you can find me. Aliza is spelled A-L-E-E-Z-A, two E's. It's phonetically spelled benshalom.com. And we offer coaching and matchmaking, and we have courses and many things. Whatever you need, give us a call. We can probably help you.
They even have an academy for matchmaking.
Yes, if you want to become a matchmaker, call me. We want to talk. I really would like to train an army of matchmakers across the globe. Jewish, not Jewish, everybody. Everybody needs to be involved in matchmaking. It's very important.
100%. Aliza, thank you so, so much. It was a pleasure. And obviously, I'll stay in touch. I love what you do. I love your energy. I love your vibe. I love everything about you. So I on behalf of the world, I thank you for being here. And we will, you know, keep following you and waiting for season two and for the book.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.